This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org.
An American press release announces the real cost of carbon emissions is three times the current U.S. government estimate. Not very shocking. So who cares? What is the real damage for every ton of carbon added? Can anyone calculate that in a future holding so much uncertainty? How do we work on climate action in the real world as it is now? Let's find out. A new study on the social cost of carbon was published in the top journal Nature September 1, 2022. The title is Comprehensive Evidence Implies a Higher Social Cost of CO2. We reached the lead author, Dr. Kevin Rennert. With a doctorate in atmospheric science, Kevin worked in senior roles at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and as advisor on energy for the Senate Finance Committee. He is a fellow and director with the group Resources for the Future, which was founded back in 1952. From Washington, D.C., Kevin Rennert, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much for having me, Alex.
Is the price of carbon a hypothetical waiting for a future, or how does the U.S. government use the carbon price?
So the federal government for the last, for several decades, has been required to do what's referred to as benefit cost analysis or regulatory impact analysis for major regulations that it undertakes. That's been going on since the Reagan administration. And in the last decade or so, an additional piece of that has been added in saying that in addition to all the other benefits you are attempting to quantify, you should also analyze and assess the benefits of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So the Obama administration moved forward with providing a harmonized number across the U.S. government for use in this benefit cost analysis, and they updated it over President Obama's 8 years or so. And that's actually the origin of the $51 per ton that the federal government is using right now in its analysis under the Biden administration. It was generated by this interagency working group had its origins in President Obama's administration.
How does the study define the social cost of carbon?
Yeah, the social cost of carbon is a dollar estimate of the damage to society resulting from an additional ton of carbon dioxide emissions released into the atmosphere. We talk about carbon dioxide in the study, but there are analogous metrics for methane, for nitrous oxide, and you can also come up with similar metrics for things like HFCs. You can effectively do this process for any greenhouse gas by changing out the greenhouse gas that is used in the climate model.
In our interviews, most climate scientists calculate the cost of carbon in terms of degrees of raising the global average temperature and then secondarily things like rising seas. So your study tries to measure the economic cost, or is it broader than that into social costs?
It's really the social cost, and this is a very important piece of what the social cost of carbon provides for the federal government and for other decision makers that are thinking about analysis and trying to take into account their effects of their policy decisions on greenhouse gas emissions. Most of those decisions are put in a framework of dollars and cents. And so having, costs on one side, which are in dollars, but not having benefits from climate also in dollars is a little problematic in terms of that broader framework. So the social cost of carbon attempts to rectify that by putting the effects of climate change into dollar terms. And so in the study that we're talking about today, we are quantifying benefits from reducing emissions or damages from increasing emissions for four major categories. Those related to temperature-related mortality, increased risk of people dying as a result of temperature change, also for changes in agriculture, as well as effects on energy consumption and also on coastal impacts.
But we do have a very uncertain future. We don't know what the stock market's going to do, what the international economy is going to do. There's a war going on, a pandemic, and then we have climate change, which is, we just saw what happened in California. It was terrible, terrible heat. So what improved tools could you bring to the table to estimate the social cost of carbon in that kind of uncertainty?
That's right. This is a very uncertain world we're living in, and that's an uncertain world that we are heading into. And also, many of the parameters that lead to this social cost of carbon estimate are themselves uncertain in terms of the climate system parameters, where our society is heading in terms of economic growth, the population, and so on and so forth. There's uncertainty throughout this process. And so when the National Academy of Sciences was asked by the federal government to look at this problem and how the federal government's process could be improved, one of their key recommendations was that you should quantify that uncertainty as well as possible throughout the entire social cost of carbon estimation chain. So that's really what we've done within this study is we're providing a central estimate for the social cost of carbon of $185 per ton, but that estimate reflects a huge distribution of model runs where we have sampled across all of those different uncertainties to really get a sense of how those uncertainties compound from, you know, the future economic growth and population and emissions to the climate model and so on. So that in the end, the number that you get is actually indicative and tells you something about that range of uncertainty as well.
Why did you add in population expectations as a factor for the cost of carbon?
Well, it's critical if you're going to think about things like temperature-related mortality that you would want to know what the future population might look like. And so we partnered with some researchers at the University of Washington, Adrian Raftery and Hanna Shevchukova, that are the statisticians behind the United Nations official population projections. And they actually took their work and they extended it even deeper into the future to account for the fact that to think about carbon, you need to be thinking beyond, you know, the next 50 or 100 years. You need to be thinking, you know, even beyond that. So they came up with a range, effectively, of potential futures and in an entire distribution of those potential population futures that have population peaking sort of mid-next century and then declining in the median, but also with a huge range of uncertainty where you could end up, you know, in a few hundred years with a population that's, you know, on the order of 30 million or 30 billion rather, or a population that is, you know, lower, that is potentially as low as maybe 3 billion. And sampling across that entire range is critical to estimating the social cost of carbon because you want to think about climate change in all of those different worlds because the effects will be different depending on how those worlds look.
So another task for your group was to monetize climate damages, to map out what the real costs could be. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So we drew from four different studies, that all of which have been peer-reviewed in the scientific literature. One study was carried out with Kevin Cromar from New York University as a lead author in conjunction with about 24 other public health experts. And they looked through the literature, through about 36 studies or so, that looked at the effects of temperature on human mortality. And so they did what's called a meta-analysis, where they looked across all of those different studies and came up with effectively a damage function that translates changes in temperature to changes in mortality at a regional level. So that's one piece of that. Another piece is work that was carried out by Fran Moore and her co-authors, which looked at changes in agriculture. The way that they carried this out is to, again, look at many, many different studies that were looking at the changes in actual agricultural yield, so the changes in the crops themselves for four different important crops to the world's food intake. And after they did that, they also incorporated the effects of trade. So when they thought about the overall economic effects, it's this combination for any given region of what happens with the crop itself in terms of its yield, but also what happens in terms of trade that ends up being the economic effect on a given region. For looking at changes in energy consumption for residential and commercial businesses, we looked at a study that was led by Leon Clark, where they used a model referred to as GCAM to assess the effects of changes in temperature on the amount of energy and the energy expenditures in those two different sectors, kind of the commercial sector and also in the residential sector. And they found that, again, there is this this balance between the fact that you are spending less money on heating because you have fewer cold days, but you're spending potentially more energy or more money on cooling because of, you know, greater increased in hot days. And when you look at that on balance, you see that there is a small net effect of climate change being an increase in energy expenditures. The final piece is looking at coastal impacts. Delaine Diaz and Tony Wong each led studies based on the same kind of underlying premise that we're looking at individual segments along coastlines and trying to identify the different actions that that kind of coastal actors might take in response to changing sea levels and looking at the damages as they decide to either retreat or adapt or, you know, build seawalls and so on and so forth.
A final piece of the puzzle is foreign to most of us. It's called discounting. I know this isn't your specialty, but what's your understanding of what discounting is and what does that have to do with the price of carbon?
Certainly. So if you think about when we emit a ton of greenhouse gas emissions, in particular carbon dioxide, it stays in the atmosphere a very long time. And that means that the damages that are caused by that ton of greenhouse gas emissions also continue over a long period of time. So to calculate the social cost of carbon, what you need to do is to basically calculate up, sum up into the future, you know, that stream of damages moving out from, you know, when you emit the pulse of greenhouse gas emissions until some point in the future, and then bring that sum back into net present value terms. So to do that, to bring these future damages into net present value terms, you need to actually decide how much you value future damages or future effects. This is a concept that's pretty, you know, familiar to you. If I said to you, Alex, I will either give you a dollar now or a dollar in a year, and I said, which would you prefer? You would probably say, I would rather have the dollar now for a variety of reasons. And if I said, how much would you require me to give you in a year for you to say, yes, I'll take that change as equivalent, you might say, maybe I need a dollar three or something like that. That tells us something about how you value, you know, money in the future, because it's telling me that you value that money less, and you value it less by about 3%. So this is now finally getting to the heart of economic discounting, is there is a rate at which you assign to say this is exactly how much you value future benefits, future damages, and so on. That means that depending on what that discount rate is, if it is a high discount rate, it means that you actually don't value things that are happening in the future very much. So something that happens with a high discount rate, damages that happen in 50 years, even if, you know, they're present in the model, you might just not value them very much. They are effectively discounted away. However, if you have a very low discount rate, that would say that future damages matter to you basically just as much as damages happening today. And in that case, those future damages that are happening in 50 years, 100 years, and so on, will actually matter a lot to this calculation of the social cost of carbon. In our analysis, what we find is that instead of using the federal government's current discount rate of 3%, which is the one that they have used now since 2003, if you use their exact same methodology by which they came to this conclusion of 3% they use for discounting today, and you just use more recent data, so you use the, you know, most recent 30 years instead of, you know, 30 years starting before 2003, you find that the current discount rate that's more relevant is closer to 2%. So when you think about that, if you lower the discount rate, that means that the future damages are going to be increased or are going to be valued further, and they contribute more to the overall estimate.
You know, when I first read this study, I thought, okay, let's leave this discounting complication to the experts. But then we find out that the Trump administration just changed the discount rate and by that brought the alleged price of carbon down to $6 a ton, which is practically nothing. And that sends a big message to the fossil fuel companies and to all sorts of people. So it really does matter when you get down to it.
It matters a tremendous amount. And we find that in this study as well. It's certainly not a secret that the level at which you set the discount rate is hugely influential in a social cost of carbon calculation. And so when we did this study, we, you know, tried to bring everything into the current state of science and the current state of economics, including the discount rate. But we also looked at, you know, what happens if you say don't change the discount rate. And in that case, you say you leave it at effectively a near-term discount rate of 3%. You still find that the social cost of carbon estimate goes up to $80 per ton instead of the current $51 per ton, even if you don't change that that discounting parameter. So there's still a substantial increase in the social cost of carbon if you just update the rest of the piece of the science, even without that discounting piece. And when you bring the discounting into the equation, you also get a much bigger increase in the social cost of carbon.
Another aspect of that problem, and raised in your new study in Nature, is the problem of long-term damages from pollution now, like going out hundreds of years into the future, as you mentioned. The grand story of the last few centuries has been growth, and today's politicians continue to promise growth, but limited natural resources and the way natural systems are reacting say that growth must end someday. Did your study consider a possible deceleration of the consumer economy?
It did. And so one of the big contributions of this study is, in fact, the set of economic projections that we look at. To come up with projections for the social cost of carbon, you need to look at, again, not just 10 or 50 years. You really need to go out hundreds of years to be able to account for you know, the full damages that are coming from these greenhouse gas emissions. And so to do that, you can't just use a regular economic model because they're not really designed for that. So we actually took a two-step process where we had a statistical model that was designed by a number of prominent economists, that trained on the last 100 years of data and then provided a set of future projections that ran all the way out to the year 2300 based on that historical data. But because there's a lot that might be in the future that just isn't in the last 100 years, we actually wanted to bring in the kind of the actual expert judgment of a number of growth economists as well. And so we did a separate study, which involves surveying in a very formal manner, in a very quantified manner, the opinions of another 10 growth experts and gave us effectively their ranges for what they think future economic growth might be. And then we used those two pieces together to come up with the overall projections of economic growth. Now, what was interesting about both of those studies is that they both indicated, the statistical model and the experts, that some very high growth possibilities are out there and also some very low growth possibilities. But the experts, in general, were much less optimistic than the model was about continued growth at a roughly 2% rate for the very long term. They actually brought that rate down, you know, closer to 1% in the median, with obviously a variation around that. And in fact, in the estimates themselves, we provide social cost of carbon values for multiple different years. And the way that you do that is by actually in the model giving that pulse of greenhouse gas emissions that you're looking at, having that happen at different times in the future. And when you do that, that's important because that pulse is happening at a different time where the economic conditions might be different, where the climate state might be different, and so on and so forth. And so you actually need to run those models for those specific years in the future as well. That's in addition to the adjusting for inflation.
Your study group also released two new open source tools. Tell us about the GIV model.
The GIV model is an open source model that brings together all of these scientific improvements for the social cost of carbon. So it is kind of four different big pieces put together. It's this set of improved socioeconomic projections. It is referred to as the RFF socioeconomic projections or RFF-SPs. It is the an updated climate model, these four different damage functions that we're talking about, as well as the updated discounting methodology. So the GIV model brings all of these different pieces together on an open source software platform. So any of your listeners out there are free to go and to our websites and to GitHub and download the source code. That model itself was built on another open source piece of software that was released that was, you know, put together by David Antoff at UC Berkeley. And this is referred to as the MIMI software platform. This platform lives to make it easy to build these kinds of models. It effectively does the hard work of the plumbing behind the scenes to pull all of this science together. And that is also a fundamental contribution because it hopefully will make it so that other scientists, in addition to our group, will be able to easily bring their science expertise to bear on this question of social cost of carbon without having to get fully up to speed on how you build an integrated assessment model. They will be able to say, if I'm a climate scientist, I want to improve the climate model and plug that in a way that is open to the community. Similarly, if I have new work on climate damages, I will be able to easily write some small bit of code that will take my results and make them available to the community of scientists that is trying to calculate social cost of carbon.
Well, that's a fantastic gift, really, because we're going to have to use all the scientific expertise and all the people of the Earth, really, to figure out what we're doing here. So now we have a better documented, more realistic price for carbon. What are the next steps for the American government?
So the American government, by executive order right now, on day one of President Biden's administration, came out with an executive order saying, federal government, you need to reinstate this interagency working group on the social cost of greenhouse gases. This is a group of the top economists and scientists across the federal government. I think there are at least 11 different agencies that are involved in this, to update the U.S. government's social cost of carbon and pay attention to these National Academy of Sciences recommendations for improving the science. So that was a sort of day one recommendation, and that process has been making its way to fruition ever since. So this interagency working group I know has been meeting, and they've been discussing the updates to the science. I don't know exactly at what points they will come out with their findings, but hopefully it will, when they do, it will take into account the science and the platform that we have put forward here in the study.
Are you aware of any other governments who have already set such a high price for carbon, the social cost of carbon?
The German government, the German equivalent of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, actually uses a higher social cost of carbon in its analysis. The Canadian government uses social cost of carbon, and I expect we'll be updating its value in the coming years as well. So I think that there will be a lot of work around the world on the social cost of carbon, ends up taking note of and piggybacking a bit on the process that the United States runs for estimating the social cost of carbon, simply because it is so labor-intensive and there's so much that goes into actually updating these numbers that when somebody puts that kind of an effort behind it, the amount of scrutiny it goes through in terms of public comments and scientific review and so on, that often is something that that other governments look to advise them in their own numbers.
What is Resources for the Future?
Resources for the Future is a nonpartisan economics think tank that is sort of reason for being is to inform natural resource and environmental decisions using nonpartisan fact-based analysis.
We've got an audience of climate-aware, educated listeners. Do you have a final message or something you would like to tell them about this issue?
Our study indicates that the federal government in the United States, anyway, has been effectively undercounting the damages from climate change in its own analysis and also undervaluing the benefits of the actions that it's been taking to address climate change. So hopefully with this improvement in science, these findings can be taken account and we can move forwards and use the results productively.
From Resources for the Future, we've been speaking with Dr. Kevin Rennert. He is the lead author of the new paper, Comprehensive Evidence Implies a Higher Social Cost of CO2. You can read more about this in some blog postings at rff.org. That is all the time we have, packed to the minute. Tune in next week for more breaking climate news. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.